You're listening to an iHeart podcast.
Lieutenant Kevin Jin, just 26 years old. Just last week, he announced he was going to get married, got down on one knee and proposed to the love of his life. But instead of planning a wedding now, his beloved sweetheart and family are planning a funeral, and I want to know why. Breaking news right now, we are learning that police have a POI person of interest. Take a listen to the New Haven Police Chief.
The New Haven Police Department's homicide unit is looking for Mr. Kingswan Pan. Date of birth of 4/16/1991. His name is spelled Q-I-N-X-U-A-N, last name P-A-N. Again, date of birth 4/16/1991. Mr. Pong was last seen at the Best Western Hotel at 201 Washington Avenue in North Haven. His last known address is 193 Clifton Street in Malden, Massachusetts. We know that Mr. Pong is a graduate of MIT and has an affiliation with that university. I am asking that the public knows that Mr. Pong should be considered armed and dangerous, and that that extreme caution should be used if you come in contact with this individual.
What happened? Take a listen to this.
I heard a gunshot, a woman scream. Several shots after that.
A neighbor recalls the harrowing details of what occurred at the corner of Lawrence and Nicole Street at 8:30 Saturday night.
Waited about a minute, came out and saw the body lying there.
The deceased has been identified as 26-year-old Kevin Jiang of West Haven. Yale University confirms he was a graduate student in their School of Environment. He was a member of the class of 2022. Multiple witnesses confirm hearing between 3 to 6 shots.
I'm still shaken up about it. All night, just we were all in disbelief.
The entire Yale community and many groups and organizations Jung was a part of are carrying that disbelief as well.
And guys, you were just hearing our friends at Fox 61. This young man, newly engaged, Lieutenant Kevin Jin, had reached the level of lieutenant within the Army. He drove a tank. He also in the reserves. He also volunteered religiously at his church, Trinity Baptist, about a mile from where he was murdered. The recently engaged, as in about 6 to 7 days engaged young man, had majored at Washington University in environmental studies and then was just a few short months away from getting his master's degree at Yale University, the Ivy Leagues. I looked it up online. It's about $65,000 all in for 1 year at Yale in the master's program. His mother had to give up her life and the household expenses of her home in Seattle and move there. They ended up living together to save money so he could get his master's degree. You think I'm going to sign up for $65,000 so my kid can get shot down in the road? No. And what is Yale saying? Oh, we're sorry. What about the 6 murders in the college town in 6 weeks? Let's get into it. Joining me, an all-star panel to break it down and put it back together again. Wendy Patrick, California prosecutor, author of Red Flags, and host of Today with Dr. Wendy on KCBQ. You can find her at wendypatrickphd.com. Dr. Daniel Bober, who studied and worked at Yale, chief psychiatry, Memorial Regional Healthcare, assistant professor at Yale, and you can find him at Dr. Daniel Bober on Twitter, B-O-B-E-R. Robert Crispin with a C, former law enforcement, now PI with CrispinSpecialInvestigations.com. The medical examiner for the entire state of Florida, Dr. Tim Gallagher. You can find him at PathCareMed.com, but straight now to crimeonline.com, investigative reporter, also with leadstories.com, Alexis Tereshchuk. Alexis, I don't get it. This guy minding his own business, 8:30 on a Saturday night, I believe. He's about a mile from his church, a few minutes away from his new fiance's home. I mean, they've been together over a year, but they were just newly engaged. And all of a sudden, he turns up dead. As I understand, his car had new damage to the back of the car, like it had been rear-ended. He was shot multiple times and found lying outside the vehicle. Tell me something I don't know, Alexis.
Well, I don't know if everybody across the country knows, but there was a huge snowstorm in the Northeast. So this was not a road. This whole area was covered with snow. It's 8:30 on Saturday night. It wasn't like the road was clear. It wasn't like he could have been speeding away or anything. He's driving slowly through the snow. And he's there at a corner, and the car has damage. It looks as if someone has rear-ended him, fresh damage. And as you said, yes, he just got engaged, got down on one knee, also in the snow, proposed to his girlfriend, gave her a ring. He was gushing about how happy he was. He posted all over Facebook. She said, yes, I love her. They met through church. And then neighbors say they heard shots. First, they heard two shots ring out. And then there was a pause. And then they hear five more in rapid succession. And he's outside of the car. He's not inside. Something happened to make him get out of this car. And these people shot him in cold blood.
You are bringing to mind a lot of lines of questioning, avenues of interrogation. I want to deal with the snow. And I want to deal with the pause in the seven shots. Two shots, pause, then five shots. That is significant for many, many reasons. But I want to first deal with the snow. Let me go straight out to you, to Robert Crispin, PI, former cop, now at CrispinSpecialInvestigations.com. We know that the crime rate goes down in the colder months and goes up when it gets warm and everybody is more out and about. Seemingly, we go down even more during COVID, but here you've got this town of New Haven, Connecticut. It's the college town, but it's fairly depressed. There's about 130,000 population, and a few years ago, a study was conducted. One in four people there live in poverty. In the shadow of Yale University, but the snow, the deep snow Alexis Tereshchuk just reported about, that actually should make a difference in this case because it certainly lowers statistically the likelihood of violent crime. Jump in.
Well, I mean, maybe to a point, but until you upset somebody or you piss somebody off, all that goes out the window because we've got seven shots. We've got two shots followed by the rest of them. They wanted him dead for whatever reason. But I will tell you about the snow. I love snow when it comes to a crime scene because the snow, as soon as those officers arrive, is going to tell us so much about that crime scene. It's going to give us tire tracks of the offending vehicle. It's going to give us footprints from the shooter. It's going to give us a direction of travel that somebody left in with the car, which is going to allow me or the investigators to go back and start pulling video cameras and backtracking from everybody's house to see where this car came from. Maybe it came out of a drive right down the street. You just don't know. But snow, I love it. The best evidence out there.
I agree with you regarding evidence. Remember in JonBenet, a big deal was made that there were no tracks in the snow outside the basement window where it is believed the perpetrator may have entered. Snow, yes. I was thinking along the lines of, if this, obviously not a carjacking because they damaged the car and they left the car, but as far as a rear end, one, as Alexis Tereshchuk pointed out, there were no high-speed road rage incidents. It was too snowy. Listen,
there could be so much more to this. That crash could have been a ruse.
Exactly. You know, a ruse to lure him out of the car?
Of course. You know, this takes so much more to look into. You know, he just got engaged. He just went public with his engagement. Was there a crazy jealous ex-lover?
Yeah,
out
what
there
about that, Dr. Mm-hmm. Daniel Bober? What about the theory? Does this have something to do with the engagement announcement the week before? Jump in.
Yeah, the timing is very curious, Nancy, and it's definitely something that I would consider based on when the engagement announcement was made. It doesn't sound like just a completely random event.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Guys, we are talking about the death of a 26-year-old young man who had devoted his life to doing something good. His name, Lieutenant Kevin Jeune, and he not only had served his country as a tank operator in the Army, he was in the reserves, and he was working to find a way to remove mercury from waterways and how to help our world and our environment. He not only worked at a food shelter, he cooked the food and served it to the homeless. A guy totally devoted to his faith of Christianity. He thought he had found his soulmate, and she thought the same. Their relationship now cut short due to violence. What happened to Kevin? Take a listen to our friends at Fox 61.
Police say they received multiple 911 calls reporting gunfire and a person shot in the area of Nash Street and Lawrence Street. The victim, 26-year-old Kevin Jiang, he was shot multiple times and died on scene, according to police.
Died on the scene, shot multiple times, a pause in the shooting. As I was discussing earlier with Robert Crispins at CrispinsSpecialInvestigations.com, while there may not have been a high-speed road rage incident with the snow, that could have easily contributed to a rear-ender and everything goes sideways. What about that theory, Wendy Patrick, California prosecutor?
Yeah, you know, that's one of the theories they're going to be exploring, because what the gunshots tell us, it's the sound of strategy, two shots followed by five. There's almost an element of planning that you wouldn't necessarily or at all expect in a road rage incident. And I love what our friend Robert Crispin explains. If somebody had intentionally set out to commit this killing, they might think a snowstorm would provide some cover without knowing it actually preserves evidence. So if we listen to the way those gunshots played out and we think about it as strategy as opposed to road rage, that may give us some leads as to who to look at next and how to begin this investigation.
I want to go to Dr. Tim Gallagher, medical examiner, state of Florida. Dr. Gallagher, do you recall the Wayne Williams serial killing case?
I do. I believe he was the serial killer from, was it the D.C. area?
Atlanta, right. And in that case, which was tried in the office where I prosecuted, it was the first time ever that the use of fiber evidence was allowed in front of a jury. Fiber evidence off many of the victim's body, young men, matched exactly to fiber in Wayne Williams's car or at his home, like shag carpet type fiber. When you look under a microscope, you can see that it looks identical. And from that fiber, you can determine what type of carpet, of course, the color. You may get blood on it, but from just that fiber, you can find the make, where it's manufactured, where it's sold. And once you get to where it's sold, you can find who bought it, what kind of car it goes into, if it's out of the trunk or the bottom, the floor of your car. In this case, I mean, have you ever had a chance to look at fiber under a microscope, Dr. Gallagher?
Oh, we do here all the time in our CSI lab report.
I'm leading up to the car. Witnesses stated, correct me if I'm wrong, Alexis Tereshchuk, that they saw, quote, a shiny, new, black car fleeing the scene.
Yes.
Shiny, and that- new, black. How did they know it was new? Did it have a sticker? Did it have one of those car lot tags on the back? shiny new black car fleeing the scene. Did you get that too, Alexis?
Yeah, and also I find the description of shiny. First of all, it's 8:30 at night, so it's dark, right? I mean, there are street lights, but shiny. Also, again, in this, like, I know it wasn't snowing at that exact second, but it had been a snowstorm. Like, why do these people have such a fancy car all of a sudden in the middle of a snowstorm?
Shiny new black car fleeing the scene. If there was a rear ender, and this was a result of road rage or an accident or even a luring technique to get Kevin out of the car, there is going to be paint, black paint, on the back of Kevin's car. What about that, Dr. Gallagher? And from that paint, we can actually determine what kind of car it was. What manufacturer uses this particular compound ingredients in the paint? Car, and what are the local dealerships, and who bought those cars in the last year if it's shiny, new, and black? Bam!
Well, it's true. We could even do better than that. A lot of the times that will alert the repair body shops in the area. If somebody had a new car, they'd probably want to fix it, you know, and we would alert the body shop owners that if this car presents at your office or at your establishment, that we would like a phone call. And cars can change hands. New cars can change hands often. It could be a rental car. Maybe that's why it looks new. You know, but somewhere along the line, somebody's going to want to fix, you know, a car with front end damage. And
fix it or burn it. Do you remember in the D.C. mansion murders where a whole family, I believe it was the Savopoulos family, was killed and the car had been stolen? I think it was a Porsche. And it was no time after that Porsche was found on fire in a different neighborhood. So
right, that's even better. We can get the serial number. We can get the VIN number from a burn. That's even better if we do find the car.
Somebody's going to unload that car. They're going to fix it, sell it, or burn it, or get rid of it, put it into a body of water, anything to disconnect them from Kevin's car. So straight out to you, to Robert Crispin, here's the deal. There are entire units within police forces, especially in metropolitan areas, that do nothing but cars because it's so overwhelming. The car thefts, theft by receiving, theft by taking, chop shops, the works. Every year, almost every year, designers change something. It may be subtle on a car. I mean, come on, look at the bug, the VW bug, and look at it now. Hello,
right.
That's what I'm talking about. Even if it's subtle, the rear ends are changed, like the tail lights, something, the side mirrors. And a good car detective can actually tell you, just like that, what the make, the model, the year, everything about the car based on those subtle changes. You can probably explain it better than I can. Go ahead.
Well, that's because, you know, the detectives, they deal with this every day. I mean, you know, a lot of good cops, you know, see a car going away from them and the car hits the brakes and they can tell you exactly what kind of car, what kind of SUV it is because of where the upper taillight is or what the size of the middle brake light is. I mean, the make and model of these things, when they deal with it every day and someone starts to describe a car to you as a lay person, they're like, oh, I just remember it had a super bright light and it had a really, really bright red light at the top in between the two, right on the trunk. Well, to me, it's a car. SUVs have them up top. So all these different little, you know, leads and all these different little statements from your witnesses kind of start to put everything together. And it's just how they do it. Take it, a vehicle pedestrian crash. You know, the vehicle hits a pedestrian, kills a pedestrian, but he leaves part of his taillight. I mean, part of his headlight, or he leaves his rearview mirror on the side. All that can be tracked back to the make, model, and kind of car it is.
Robert Crispin, do you have children?
I do.
Did you ever watch Aristocats with them?
Occasionally.
Okay. We've seen it maybe 105 times. This is just like over and over and over. Well, there is a scene in Aristocats, and I would probably tell the jury this, where there's two dogs. I swear I think their names are Napoleon and Bonaparte, but I'm not sure. And one of them can lift his ear up, and he can tell you what's coming. He can tell you if it's Bertram, the evil butler that drugged the kitty cats. He can tell you if it's jalopy, if it's bicycle, if one tire is flat. What I'm saying is, in a roundabout way, if we can get any ID on this car at all, a good car cop, a detective, can help determine the make, model, even the year, and we can start tracking this killer.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Who killed Kevin Jiang? Guys, take a listen to our friend Tony Aiello at CBS2.
A sense of shock and sadness has settled on the Yale University community after the Saturday night shooting death of grad student Kevin Jiang.
I don't have a memory of him where he wasn't smiling and happy. And even if you didn't agree with all of his views, he was more than happy to be your best friend.
8:30 Saturday night, residents in the East Rock neighborhood heard the distinct sound of gunfire. One man spoke to me off camera.
I heard like around 7 rapid gunshots. Like I turned the lights off because I was scared.
Police say someone shot Jiang multiple times. He was found near his car, which had rear end damage. One possible motive police are exploring: violent escalation after a road rage incident.
We're exploring every possibility, including whether or not there was an accident that precipitated this incident, whether or not it was a road rage. We do have very specific leads that we're exploring, but we're not ruling anything out at this time.
Straight out to Dr. Daniel Bober, Chief of Psychiatry at Memorial Regional Healthcare Systems and Assistant Professor at Yale. Dr. Daniel Bober, you lived and worked in this area, this exact area, for such a long time. Did you hear the neighbor say, "I was afraid"? Isn't it true that you often would wake up at night hearing gunfire?
Yes, Nancy. I mean, this story is very personal to me, not just because of the Yale connection, but also because he was in the military as well, and I worked with the military. But yes, quite frequently when I was living in New Haven, I heard gunshots all the time at night. So there was definitely its share of crime for sure. Now, that's obviously not unique to New Haven, and I don't think it has anything to do with Yale, but it was definitely something I experienced when I was living there.
You know, I looked up online how much it cost to go to Yale, and I just want to tell you what I learned. Let's see here. All in. Oh, wait, here we go. $43,000 plus to go to the, be enrolled in the Master's Environmental Program, plus $20,000 plus for books and necessities. That's the bare minimum. That's about $65,000, bare minimum. I mean, then I guess you have to eat, right? And you have to get back and forth to classes. Why would anybody pay $70,000 for their baby to be gunned down in the street to go to Yale University? I mean, growing up on a red dirt road, as you know that I did, I guess I dreamed of Ivy League, and I was thrilled to get to go to Mercer and to NYU to complete my legal studies. But I would think long and hard before sending one of my children to such a high crime area, Dr. Bober.
Well, again, I mean, I think New Haven has a lot of depressed areas. There's definitely a lot of crime, but people send their kids there because of the quality of the education and the kind of people that they're going to be exposed to on campus.
You mean like the person that shot Kevin Jiang dead?
No, I wasn't talking about him, but I was talking about
the other
professors
people.
And the other students. Yeah.
I hear you. I hear you, Dr. Bober. Why did you go to Yale?
Well, I went to Yale because, you know, they had one of the best psychiatry programs in the country, and I wanted to get the best training so I could, you know, give the best for my patients, and that's where I went. And I had a great experience when I was there. And obviously I myself was not a victim of crime, but, you know, it's no secret that New Haven does have some crime-ridden areas for sure.
Yeah, I remember taking out loans to go to law school at Mercer University first, their Walter F. George School of Law, and then later I went back for a master's degree in criminal and constitutional law at NYU. That cost some money. I remember I would eat one cucumber roll. Alexis, you're going to love this. One cucumber roll, one salad, and water for dinner while I was paying to go to NYU. And I would sit there and study alone at the sushi bar eating my one cucumber roll. People sacrifice so much to go to name schools. I remember, Alexis, how thrilled we all were when my sister got into the Wharton School at University of Pennsylvania. It was just the biggest thing that ever happened to us. We were thrilled. I'm thinking about Kevin's mother, what she went through moving from, I believe it was Seattle, to move in with him to help him get through this. I mean, the it's a whole family effort to get somebody through an Ivy League school.
And he was even actually supporting her. He was taking care of his mom. That's why he moved her across country, so that he could cut down on expenses and they could live together. So she has nothing now. Her son has been murdered, brutally murdered, and he was the one that was taking care of her. This is a wide-ranging tragedy. It's affecting so many lives.
Guys, take a listen to our friend Xenia Maldonado at Fox 61.
I'll always remember him as being a very just welcoming and wholesome individual, and he was very proud to be a part of the Yale community.
Jiang was a grad student at the Yale School of Environment, the school holding a virtual vigil for Jiang Monday night, his parents both in attendance.
He gave me a lot of joy. He's a very thoughtful, warm boy, taking care of me, and I miss him.
Like you all said, he's a very, very charming, very friendly, very opening.
Jiang served in the U.S. Army National Guard. During the vigil, those who served beside him sharing memories.
Everyone who met him said that he was so they called him Jiggity Jiang because he was so energetic all the time.
Jiang was a few days away from celebrating his 27th birthday, and he proposed to his fiance, Zion Perry, just last week. Perry sharing a statement reading in part, "Kevin was and is a gift from God. Life is so precious and short, and I am so thankful that God brought us together."
What strength his family is showing at a time like this. I want to go straight out to Robert Crispin, former law enforcement now at CrispinSpecialInvestigations.com. What are the cops doing right now? They keep giving statements. They're not releasing a lot of information. I don't think they wanted it to get out that he was outside of the car when he was found, sustaining multiple gunshot wounds.
Yeah, all that's intentional, that they're not releasing that information. And it's also why they don't release the specific cause of death in other cases. Obviously, we know that, you know, our victim was shot and killed, but there's a reason that they're not releasing this information, because if the bad guy's listening, if the leads are still out there and the evidence is still out there, we don't want that tampered with or destroyed or altered in any way, should we find it. So there's a reason when they don't tell you how somebody died. We just have a dead body inside an apartment somewhere, because if we do get a victim, or I mean, we do get a suspect and we go to interview him, only the suspect's going to know exactly the facts of that case when he goes to confess to us. Yeah, you know what? I did. I shot him in the head and I shot him twice in the leg because he upset me. Well, those are facts that only the suspect is going to know. And you start putting out different things into the public, and the bad guys start seeing, like, oh my God, they know it's, you know, a black car. I got to get rid of this car. A lot of crimes happen, and law enforcement releases information that says, we have absolutely no leads. We need help from the public. These suspects sometimes get a false sense of security. They keep driving the car. So there's a reason that law enforcement releases certain things in a certain way. They're not giving up. That to me tells me they potentially have a suspect. They potentially have a car. They could be doing active surveillance on a suspect right now. They could be sitting on a car that's parked in a parking lot in an apartment complex waiting for someone to get into it. There's a host of things that's going on, and they're not going to release what they've got. They're giving you enough to get by.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Guys, we were talking about the death of Lieutenant Kevin Jian. What happened? Why is this 26-year-old man dead with his life in front of him? Take a listen to our cut number four. This is Tony Terzi at Fox 61.
Kevin Jiang's Facebook page biography was poignant. Life is a gift I am so thankful for.
So the Yale community is grieving right now. This is a loss of an extraordinary young man.
At approximately 8:30 p.m. on Saturday, officers responded after receiving numerous 911 calls of gunshots,
which occurred here in the area of Lawrence and Nickel Streets in New Haven. Kevin Jiang pronounced dead on scene.
His identity was confirmed to be a resident of West Haven, 26 years old, and he was a graduate student attending the Yale School of Environment.
Police won't say much about the case, including why Jiang, who had just proposed to his fiancée a week before he was killed, was in the East Rock neighborhood.
We have developed information suggesting that this incident may not have been an actual random act, and that he, in fact, was targeted.
What do they mean by not a random act? Does that have to do with his just announced engagement? Does it have to do with road rage, that he was hunted down because of road rage and shot dead in the street when he was lured out of his car? What happened? The mystery only mounts as the days go by, but I have another idea, and I want to throw this out there to you. First of all, Dr. Daniel Bober, I want to circle back to you. Dr. Bober, assistant professor at Yale, who also studied there. I know that was more of a rhetorical question. I know why people sacrifice all their money, all their savings to help their children or themselves get through an Ivy League school. Because it is believed that those are the very best schools in the world, and that if you can get through, you'll be set. I mean, you think your children will be set for life if they get that golden ticket, that Yale University, Harvard University, University of Pennsylvania, you know, Brown, that golden ticket that will take them through the rest of their lives. That's why people do it. It's the mecca of learning, Dr. Bober. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, I agree. I think, like in the case of your sister, you said she got into Wharton. You know, Wharton is probably the best business school that there is. So, I mean, these are things that parents do to give their kids every possible advantage in life. And, you know, crime is something that's going to happen anywhere, and some areas have more crime than others. But you know, you want the best for your kids, and sometimes you're willing to make these sacrifices to make that happen.
To you, Robert Crispin, and let me try with you too, Wendy. This is New Haven, West Haven, Connecticut. That is a coastal town. There are going to be a lot of tolls. And throughout the Northeast, there are tolls, 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 bridges and tolls with surveillance cameras. That's what I'm working up to. Not only surveillance cameras on tolls, basically any direction the perp would have gone, but residential surveillance cameras, public transportation surveillance cameras, Ring doorbell, you name it. There's a way to try to piece together where this black car, this shiny new black car, went. I mean, Wendy Patrick, you saw what the New Canaan police did in the case of Jennifer Dulos, right? They pieced together a video timeline based on everything from home surveillance video to bus doors opening and closing and seeing the husband drive by.
Now, that's exactly right. So what we have thus far, we have ear witnesses and eyewitnesses. We have the people that heard the distinct sound of gunfire, as it was explained, numerous 911 calls that let you know there were lots of people that actually heard this. But it's the eyewitnesses that are going to be able to link up what surveillance cameras may have captured regarding suspect vehicles with a vehicle, the shiny black car as it was described, that was actually at the scene. And one of the challenges there, Nancy, as you and I, and actually as all of our guests know, is you tend to recognize things you're familiar with. So wouldn't it be great if you actually did have somebody with a working knowledge of cars or some sort of a mechanical background that would have been able to say those distinctive markings on that suspect vehicle matches what we have on those surveillance videos, because it is the timeline that eventually, hopefully, is going to be putting this together as a case gets prepared for a jury.
And not just any black car, this black car. To Alexis Terezchuk, joining me, crimeonline.com investigative reporter, as well as with leadstories.com. Alexis, Molly Tibbetts, remember? No leads. What happened to Molly? Couldn't find her. Long story short, I believe it was residential home surveillance camera catches a vehicle that is going back, and then it comes back, and then back, and then back. Where? In the area where she was jogging. What did it have? It had distinctive markings on the side of it. I think it's going to end up being scratches along the side of that car. That's how they found the killer. And I remember Michelle Parker, the so-called People's Court mom. She had all of those stickers or glow tan or something that she was advertising her home business on her Hummer. When her Hummer was found, those individual, peculiar to her car only stickers had been scratched off. It's very significant if they can get video of this car to see what, if any, markings are on it. But hey, the big one, I'm burying the lead here. There's going to be damage most likely on the front. I can't say which end because I don't know where Kevin's car was damaged in the back. But there's going to be damage on the front of that black car, Alexis.
And the police are going to go to, as you said, they're going to go to the repair shops. They know which ones probably are, you know, the ones that are going to handle quick fixes like this. And they're going to go and they're going to say, look, if you have this car, if somebody comes in, you better let us know, because it's part of a crime scene. It's not just, oh, I bumped into the wall as I was backing out of my driveway. Like, this is, the police are going to go to each of these places around town that they know, and they're going to do it. And also, it doesn't even have to be like the four houses on the corner where Kevin was murdered. It can be two blocks down. They can get the image if they see a black car there, either in any direction. It doesn't have to be right around there, but they can get images, you know, further away from the scene of the crime.
And there's also, to you, Robert Crispin, private investigator, CrispinSpecialInvestigations.com, the issue of cell phone data, or if Kevin's vehicle had a navigational system, because we can look and see where he was and for how long. For instance, where was he right before the shooting? Had he been in a bar? Did he get in an altercation? Did he get in an argument with somebody in the grocery store parking lot and they followed him? I mean, you can learn so much from that navigation system in the car and from his cell phone. Right, Crispin?
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, that knife cuts both ways, because once I develop a suspect and I drop a subpoena for his cell site tower location, I can ping him right to the scene. So if I catch a LPR, we call them the license plate readers, and we do identify a vehicle and we identify a suspect, it's just like here in Florida, you can't go anywhere without getting caught by a license plate reader. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we do talk about some of these places are more repressed and there's more homicides. Believe it or not, especially here in Miami, there's more license plate readers in some of the repressed areas where our higher crime rate is. So I'm going to probably venture to say that, you know, they're employing the LPR system and they're trying to identify something. And to talk about the cell phones, absolutely. You're carrying an electronic device that is pinging off of hundreds and hundreds of towers as you're driving. As every time you drive down the road and you stay on your phone for an hour talking, driving up the turnpike, you're bouncing off of cell phone towers and they're jumping your signal to tower to tower to tower. And technology today can put you within 50 feet of a crime scene.
Guys, for those of you who don't know about LPRs, license plate readers, we pass them all the time. Robert, the ones that I'm familiar with are just a straight metal rod sticking up, let's just say on the side of the interstate, and then horizontal to that are a series that look like solar panels, you know, maybe 2 feet tall, And those are actually license plate readers. Are those the ones you're talking about?
So there's a couple different kinds. Obviously, there's the fixed ones that are at bridges or along interstates, but there's also the ones that are on police cars. And those cameras, if you look at the hood or you look at the near the light bar or the back deck of the police car, you see those cameras are angled down a certain way. And as that officer's driving around, those tags or those cameras are automatically running your tag. They're giving a picture, they're giving a GPS coordinate location, and they're running it to see if it's stolen. Automatically, the computer is designed to do that just as the cop drives down the street. It's how we find a lot of people. Once we get your tag, I can tell you where you are, what time your car was parked there, and I have an image of it. I can guarantee you LPR is going to come into this a little bit if they can get a tag.
Again, in the last hours, the breaking news is that there is a POI, person of interest. Does what we know about this man, Keyshawn Pond, fit with the evidence that we know to be true? Take a listen again to the New Haven police chief.
Mr. Pong is wanted for questioning at this time. We have a warrant for his arrest for a stolen vehicle out of North Haven. Correction, for a stolen vehicle that he possessed in North Haven. The North Haven Police Department came in contact with Mr. Pong soon after our homicide. He is currently a person of interest in our investigation, but I want to make sure you know that he is currently not wanted on that homicide. Again, he should be considered armed and dangerous, and we ask the public to continue their efforts to help us in identifying any further witnesses. Any more information that you have is critical to this investigation, but we just want to make sure that the public knows that he has been identified.
If you're questioning what you just heard, so am I. It's a lot of double talk. Bottom line, they're looking for this guy, Keyshawn Pan. They're not calling him a suspect. They're saying he is armed and dangerous. That's enough for me. The search is on. Nancy Grace, Crime Story, signing off. Goodbye, friend.
You're listening to an iHeart podcast.